From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Seattle Democrat Jim McDermott represents the 7th Congressional District, and he's back. Jimmy McDermott is a senior member of the House Ways and Means Committee, which is responsible for writing tax law, among other things. He's the ranking member on the House Subcommittee on Health, and he's serving his 12th term in Congress. Thanks so much for stopping by. We appreciate it.
13th term.
13th, excuse me. We missed one there. How do we do that? So it's summertime, and I understand when you're not legislating, you like to paint and garden. Are you doing much painting this summer? I'm just curious.
I've been doing a little bit, although I'm doing a little remodeling in my house, so it's hard to do that with all the carpenters in there.
Yeah. What kind of a painter are you? Representational, abstract?
I do sumi painting.
What is that?
That's brush and ink, Japanese style. So it is, it's Confucian painting that comes out of Buddhism, and it's one of the art forms of Buddhism.
Do you find it relaxing after the stresses and strains of being a congressman?
Well, the essence of it is becoming one with the brush, meaning that you have to pull yourself away from the rest of the world and get down to the stroke that you're making. Miles Davis compared it to playing the trumpet, because when you blow a note on the trumpet, you can't get it back. It's gone. You've got to blow another one and another one, another one. The same is true in sumi painting. You make a stroke, you can't change it. You've got to draw another one. And so you have to be one with the brush or one with the trumpet.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
We'll have to see them sometime. Jim McDermott, in your capacity as a senior member on the House Ways and Means Committee, you participated in those hearings into the IRS scandal when it was learned that some groups applying for tax-exempt status were given closer scrutiny based on their names or their political themes. First, we heard about words like Tea Party causing them to be flagged, and later on, we heard some liberal-leaning groups also were getting more scrutiny from the IRS. What did the IRS do wrong, and are they still doing it?
Well, most of that was contrived to make a scandal because the Republicans wanted to discredit the IRS as an agency that will play a part in the Affordable Care Act implementation. And so they took this issue of screening of applications for tax exemptions made an issue out of it. Now, the IRS sits there, and if you walk in and say, I formed a new political party, the Ross Reynolds Political Party, and I want a tax exemption, they ask you a lot of questions. And if they didn't, you would think they were crazy if they just gave you a tax exemption. So they had all these people come in as a result of the Citizens United law that came through, forming parties, forming all kinds of organizations, and they were overwhelmed, and they blocked a group of people. I mean, they used ways of kind of screening out groups of applications. They did it to Republicans and Democrats. They did it to left and to right. The only people who complained were the ones on the right. They said, you shouldn't ask us all those questions. You should just give us a tax exemption, which was crazy. It would not have been good government policy for them not to go through the process. So in the end, there turned out to be no scandal.
So you call it contrived, a non-issue. The IRS shouldn't be doing anything differently than they did.
The IRS had what they were called BOLO lists, be on the lookout for, B-O-L-O. And that was a way of, as you read through these things, say, look for these kinds of things. They had them both for progressive groups and for conservative groups. And the only one that we heard about were the ones for the conservative groups. They have to screen them somehow. I mean, if you have 1,000 things to do tomorrow, you have to kind of figure out, well, which ones are the important ones and how am I going to decide which ones I do what with? And that screening mechanism was made to appear to be bad, but it wasn't really that bad.
So the BOLO lists are okay? I mean, whether they're screening for liberal groups or conservative groups, you think it's okay to use names and labels like that as flags for extra scrutiny?
Yeah. I think you have to have some way to pick things out. If everybody called themselves progressive, if I were looking at 100, I would look for ones that said I'm the progressive liberal party or I'm the progression for farm subsidies or I'm progressive on education. I would look at what do they mean by progressive? Is that a political party or is it something that's tax exempt? And that's really what they were using, was a word that would alert them to what might be going on inside that organization.
Congressman McDermott, I never heard the end of this story. Were any of these groups that were flagged actually denied tax-exempt status under suspicious circumstances? What was the result of this, that they were given extra scrutiny? Has anyone looked, gone back to look at that?
It sort of died out. It was like a one, you know, it was a month story that floated around, but it really died out because none of them were prevented from doing what they wanted to do. They could organize, they could have part, they could do all they wanted. They just had to report where their money came from.
To get the tax exemption.
To
steps.
Get the tax exemption. And that's what they were trying to get, was they wanted to be under the surface, so you would, under the radar, so you'd never know where the money came from. And they were not prevented from collecting money and spending all the money and doing whatever they wanted. And I don't know if any of them were actually denied or not.
Mm. Something to look back at, maybe. Congressman Jim McDermott is my guest. Maybe you've got a question for him. He's very likely your congressman if you're listening to his voice. 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW or 800-289-5869. Or you can write us an email, where our email is conversation@kuow.org. Pat writes to ask, this week there were two amendments on the defense appropriations bill to stop surveillance on Americans. What were the specifics that caused the AMASH amendment to fail?
That was a very, it's one of the most interesting votes that we've had this year, actually. It was not whipped by the leadership to go one way or the other. Every member made his own or her own choice. For instance, in our delegation, I think Kathy McMorris Rogers, who's one of the leadership in the Republican side, and Susan DelBene and I voted together for the AMASH amendment. The other members of the delegation voted no. Now, you'd have to go to each one of them and ask them why they made that decision, because the intelligence agencies, NSA and others, came in and made a big pitch not to pass that amendment. They were very much opposed. They lobbied as hard as anybody to get people not to vote for it.
Apparently succeeded.
And they succeeded by 12 votes. If six members had changed their vote and voted the other way, it would have been changed the whole of their ability to do surveillance in this country. So it was a very hard vote, and it was done on the basis of everybody's political view of how much intrusion we want to have from the federal government into our private lives.
And do you think that's the end of it? A pretty close vote like that might suggest that it would be raised again and perhaps the votes could be gotten together.
I think that's what's going to happen. You'll see it again. That issue is too close for the proponents and the opponents. The proponents are going to push it again on some bill that's going to pass in the next 6 months.
Broad brush, the National Security Agency inquiries were thought to have only been about people perhaps suspected of terrorism. And what we've been learning in recent months is that it's much broader than that. It's collecting all kinds of information from all kinds of people that weren't suspect. That's the issue. Would passing these amendments fix that problem and cause the NSA to be more focused in their inquiries?
Well, if they're going to stay within the law, they would.
Mm-hmm.
And my belief is that it ought to change what they do. I am suspicious the way they operate sometimes, that they sometimes drift a little away across the line. So I'm one who is not totally trusting, but I think it would be good if the Congress made a statement and said, this is what you should do. We then have a basis to go after them if they continue to do what they've done in the past. Their argument is, yes, we don't know where we're going to find. We just throw a net out in the sea and catch every fish we can, and we hope that we're going to catch a salmon. And that's not a very good way to fish when you're invading the lives of everybody in the country and taking your phone calls and my phone calls and everybody else's phone calls who are not under suspicion. Why should they be listening into my phone calls or yours?
We got Brian on the line in Silverdale. We're going to get to you in just a moment, Brian. But I wanted to ask about Edward Snowden. A lot of what we know about the NSA is because of revelations from this private contractor, Edward Snowden, who's now in limbo at the Moscow airport. The U.S. government is pressuring governments all over the world not to provide him with asylum. We had Attorney General Holder say, I believe yesterday or today, he was reassuring governments that if Snowden is brought back here, he will not be executed. Do you think Snowden is the villain here?
No, I really don't. I have a hard time. I don't know all the facts, and it's hard to make a final judgment on it. But in Europe, I just had in my office yesterday a German member of the parliament, and he said, Europe is in flames about this. They are so angry at the NSA when they find out the NSA is collecting their phone calls. And they have created, the NSA has created in the world a real question about whether you can trust the Americans, because they have been collecting this data and they haven't told people they were doing that. And then they find it out from Snowden. They are really enraged. And it's going to be an issue in the German election.
You say Snowden is not the villain. Is that to say he shouldn't be subject to – he hasn't violated any U.S. laws? Do you think he should be prosecuted if they bring him back?
I think anybody who acts in the political realm has to face the consequences of what they've done. And if that means going to court and so forth, and but you know, does he have a defense? I suspect he does, and I think that should be argued out in a court of law. It shouldn't be decided by people on the radio or in the blogosphere or anywhere else deciding yes or no. I think he deserves his day in court, and the question is, will he get a fair day in court? I mean, he doesn't think so. I suspect that's why he wants to stay out of the country, but. That's the risk you take when you do something like that.
Let's go over to Silverdale. We've got Brian, who's been waiting patiently to ask his question. Brian, good afternoon. What's your question for Congressman McDermott?
Good afternoon, Congressman. My question is, have there been any discussions about reforming military retirement as a possibility to help address budget concerns?
Brian, I have not heard any discussion. Are you talking about early retirement or how much money people get when they retire? Or I don't know what kind of reform you might be talking about, because there has been nothing specific talked about in Washington that I've heard in the last 3-4 months as we've struggled with the budget.
I was just thinking about the retirement that military members are eligible for after 20 years of service. And how the personnel portion of the DOD budget and the medical coverage that goes along with that, if there's been any discussions about either taking a closer look at that or reforming that as a big chunk of the defense budget or the national budget at all.
Well, you know, you're raising really a big question. I've actually started a commission got a commission underway trying to get it in place to look at our relationship toward those people who are in the military. Right now we have a volunteer military, and they are about 0.5% of the population. And they make an agreement that they will serve the country for X number of years in exchange for a pension that begins when they're 20, after 20 years, and they'll get health care benefits for the rest of their life and a variety of things. We offer that to them and say, this is an exchange for your willingness to go and sacrifice your life for this country. Now, when you look at one side of it, you can say, well, that's too much. But on the other hand, the things we're asking them to do are the very toughest things in life. That is to go and give your life for your country. And my belief is that we have to come to a decision about what we're willing to do for these people, what we're willing to provide in healthcare, because right now you've got suicides in the military. More suicides than you have people killed in action. And my view is that this is a discussion that's bigger than simply the budget. It's what kind of relationship are we going to have toward the military and toward the warrior? It's not enough to just say thank you for your service when they come home. That makes people mad because they say to me, thank you for my service. That's what you say to a guy who brings you a cup of coffee. I was sent under orders to do this, and I did it. And it's not thank you for your service. So there's a lot to be learned on both sides of this issue.
Hey, thanks a lot for your phone call, Brian. President Obama has been making some speeches this week about his economic priorities, restoring the middle class, restraining some of the wealth that the wealthier are bringing in. And I've been reading that this is kind of almost a prelude to some big budget showdowns happening in Congress this coming fall. Could you give us a preview? What's kind of on the horizon this fall when it comes to the budget?
Well, in a few days, Ross, we'll come out of Congress for the month of August. We'll leave on about the 3rd. We'll go back in on the 8th of September, and we have 9 working days between that and October 1 when the new fiscal year starts. Now, people remember what goes on here in the legislature when you come screaming up to July 1st and how the question is whether the state's going to close down. Well, that's basically what we've got. We're going to be facing is how do we finance the United States after October 1. Now, we can do it one of two ways. We can have a budget in which we've laid out all the parameters of what we want done, or we can do a continuing resolution which says we're going to continue just exactly what we've done in 2013 is what we'll do in 2014. Now, that's a tough enough decision, but then you throw in the fact that our borrowing possibilities are about run out. We've borrowed up to the debt limit. And so the Republicans, many of them are saying, well, the debt limit is wrapped into that. So you've got the debt limit, and you've got the continued operation of the country, and you've got a third thing. You now have a group of Republican senators who signed a law and says they won't vote for anything if it funds Obamacare. So they want to use this crucial time, this perfect storm coming on October 1, to be the time when they take the president's health care bill and squash it, take away the ability to fund it. So it has the real possibility of October 1 being a real crisis time. And that's not good for us economically, and it's not good for our people. Every way you look at it, it's not good policy.
That's not what we want to hear. You were incorrectly mentioned as endorsing one of the mayoral candidates for Seattle this week. Would you like to correct the misimpression and tell me who you are endorsing for mayor of Seattle?
I never endorse anybody in primaries. Warren Magnuson said to me one time, Jim, if you endorse somebody in the primary, you make one friend and 1,000 enemies.
Great. Can we call you up on August 7th and get your endorsement for the general?
Give me a day or two after that.
All right.
And I'll talk to you.
Okay. We'll be back on the line with it. And what about a 14th term for Congressman Jim McDermott? Have you thought about that yet?
I'm raising money and working toward another term. I want to finish getting Obamacare in place. And we're going to start on the 1st of 2014. We'll be halfway. It's going to take a little while to get it all worked out. Enrolling 30 million people is a big job. There'll be glitches in the way it operates, things we didn't anticipate. Because whenever you design something, you think you've thought of everything, and then something else happens. So I want to be there for the next couple of years to make sure that it works.
Jim McDermott, 7th District Congressman, thank you so much for stopping by today. We really appreciate it.
See you again, Russ.
This is KUOW 94.9 Seattle, and it's time once again to play Public Radio's third most popular game show, The Conversation News Quiz.